Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. So we're glad to have another episode of DX Talks, and this time with Cardano Foundation, our dear friends. A lot of exciting, I would say, news that are coming as we speak. So November is a very busy month. An event will be hosted in Dubai. We were going to be finding out more of this, and our discussion of today is about the partnerships and what's happening in the world of humanitarian assistance and how can blockchain really solve those issues and try to really change things. So join us for this exclusive interview with Alexander, or Alex Maza, the Outreach Development Officer at Cardano Foundation. Alex has played a crucial role in establishing significant partnerships, including groundbreaking collaboration between Cardano Foundation and the UNHCR, High Commission for Refugees. And then we know what's the situation of the refugees in the globe and what's happening. In this interview, we will delve into the partnerships between Cardano and UNHCR, as well explore how blockchain technologies is being leveraged to provide assistance to forcibly displaced individuals. Additionally, we get an exclusive sneak peek into much anticipated Cardano Foundation event that is scheduled in November 2023 in Dubai this time. Last year we hosted, I was one of the organizers of the community event in Dubai, and it was super success. So we're looking forward for the 2023 edition. So join us and join our expert to share their insights on the event theme, discover how this event aims to empower the global blockchain community and foster, most importantly, meaningful collaboration for decentralized and sustainable future. So let me welcome again my host, my guest, Alex. Alex, welcome to DX Talks.
Hi, Rudy. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to be here.
Do you mind introducing yourself to our audience? What do you do and what is your specialization?
Of course. I'm just to introduce the Cardano Foundation as a Swiss-based nonprofit that's responsible for advancing Cardano as a public digital infrastructure and to really anchor it in the financial and social systems of the world. And our focus at the foundation is threefold. It's about adoption, it's about education, and it's about operational resilience. My role at the foundation is primarily on the partnership side of things, and I look at sustainability-related topics. So the use of blockchain for sustainability, which we'll be speaking about today, around the use case that we have with the UN Refugee Agency, and the sustainability of the blockchain. So the ability for this amazing technology to continue delivering value in a decentralized, distributed way long into the future, hopefully long after you and I are both gone from this planet, but it still ends up being a good place to live.
I love what you said, long after we're still available, because this is the aim of this technology. And that's why, can you provide us an overview of the current state of blockchain technology and how it's going to impact various industries?
Yeah, so I think blockchain has really innovative new technology compared to many of the other forms of digital technology, like we know of the internet, the World Wide Web. Now there's a lot of talk around AI and ML that really kind of comes forward. When you speak about blockchain, it's really a foundational technology that looks at a number of different sectors in which it could have an impact, really focusing on key issues like security, trust, and efficiency, and really trying to bring gains and reduce costs in these types of thematic areas. I think really the applications are broad. Essentially, it's a communication technology that could be applied transversally. And a key part around blockchain technology is obviously, as demand increases, scalability and transaction throughput becomes really crucial to meet that kind of demand. And, you know, maintaining security and decentralization is really important. And one of the ways that these types of needs can be met is, you know, education, education, and education. This is part of what we're doing, you know, on this stream. And another bit that we're doing with education is comes to the Alpha program that the foundation is currently doing, where we believe that free quality education about blockchain and very accessible education about blockchain technology could provide the architects of the future with the means to actually use this technology and tailor it to solve some of the problems that they're the experts in. I think a key part of Web3, of course, is the ability to have community come into the ownership and the management of a technology platform like blockchain, Cardano in the case of what I work on. But really, again, you know, it's all about scaling to meet the needs of current and future demands and really kind of finding that in decentralization and security above all.
Thank you. I think it's interesting points that you have discussed. And I want to focus now more on how Cardano is really unique among other blockchains and trying to solve maybe those problems.
Yeah, of course. So there's this famed scalability trilemma that is often shared around the different trade-offs that blockchain projects or layer ones will need to take in order to try to achieve decentralization, security, and scalability all at once. We think that Cardano is rather unique in the sense that it has an incredibly vibrant community that both contributes to the adoption of the protocol and the development of use cases, but also the development of the technology, the foundational technology that can be reused for a number of different use cases. And that kind of speaks to the sustainability of the protocol, a powerful community that maintains the code base, that sets directions, and that allows us to thrive as an ecosystem. I think a second few bits and pieces is really around the tech stack and the technological specificities of Cardano. We're a proof of stake protocol that is provably secure. We're one of the few programmable layer ones that actually uses extended unspent transaction output. And that's essentially using the accounting model that is used by the Bitcoin blockchain and extending that to give it programmability, you know, use of smart contracts, NFTs, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the last bit is really when it comes to Cardano's metadata capability, where the metadata can actually be flexible and fit the customizable needs for different types of industrial applications and very specific applications that we see coming up in current times and also in future. And really, again, you know, to emphasize the community aspect, Cardano is people over code. And this code really serves the people. And this is how we see this kind of going forward, is really to make sure that this community of developers, of adopters, of token holders all participate on equal footing in the direction of the Cardano ecosystem and the Cardano blockchain as a whole.
Yes, it's very interesting. Thanks again for this. You know, community is a must. Community is first sometimes, because everything will be driven and is driven by the community itself. And this is where we start rolling into what Cardano is working with the United Nations to bring solutions in helping dispersed and displaced people at the end of the day. Can you elaborate more on your involvement with the UNHCR using the blockchain technology and how it's helping and address those humanitarian challenges?
Of course. So when it comes to displaced people, there are over 108 million of these, according to some reports at the end of 2022. And this is likely to be a growing trend, given, you know, conflicts, climate change, and other types of disruptions to people's lives. And when it came to the work that we're currently doing with Switzerland for UNHCR, so the UN Refugees Agency's national partner in Switzerland, We were looking at solving a very clear problem that's actually present, or at least piloting the solution for a problem that's present in many humanitarian organizations, where when it comes to resource mobilization, and this is, you know, fundraising, so financially, but also in-kind types of resources that get mobilized to support beneficiaries like refugees, typically these are linked to moments of crisis where people and organizations are more willing to give, whether these are conflicts such as the one in Ukraine or natural disasters such as the earthquake in Syria and Turkey. People will typically give to these. And at the same time, when people give to these types of crises, typically these are things that are called earmarked funding, which means that the money and the resources that are that are mobilized for these in these moments are usually only allowed to be deployed in these areas for that specific use case. And the reality is, of course, humanitarianism is something that happens also in between crises, where people still have to deliver resources to some of the most vulnerable. And this kind of challenge has resulted in numerous underfunded refugee crises being chronically underfunded over a number of years. And so what we were exploring, with this stake pool is a method, at least currently at a small scale, to generate funding and mobilize resources that can happen on a continuous basis and not be marked by crisis events, but also not be earmarked to a specific location or crisis, but rather generate resources that can be used at the UN Refugee Agency's discretion and expertise, rather than being dictated by donors. And so the way that we looked at doing that is by using Cardano's proof of stake protocol, which is quite unique and industry leading in the sense that it is liquid staking at the protocol level and not at a derivative level. What that means is ADA, Cardano's cryptocurrency, can be delegated as stake to secure the network. This ADA, when delegated, is not locked. It is non-custodial, and there is no slashing penalty attached to people delegating that specific ADA, which really mitigates any forms of risks related to bad validator behavior. And so it also makes it incredibly predictable what the staking reward may be and, you know, what the risks involved are. And so what we're doing with the stake pool is trying to create a new way of, mobilizing financial resources through staking rewards that are distributed completely by the Cardano protocol and are the result of people delegating their stake. And the really interesting bit about this is when people delegate their stake, they do not give away their principal. They maintain their principal, and what they give is the staking rewards that they would have earned on top of that. And where we've looked at this from a B2C perspective, where we engaged the Cardano community, who's had a fantastic response and delegated close to 1.5 million ADA in stake over the past few months, both through stake delegation as well as the purchasing of charity-oriented NFTs. And what we'll be doing pretty soon is going towards piloting the B2B approach, which can be really interesting for the corporate social responsibility departments of Web3 and non-Web3 organizations that might want to still maintain some of their principal in cryptocurrency and still support a good cause. And on top of that, another aspect of this which is interesting is, should they themselves choose to make a donation to the stake pool in perpetuity, they can support a cause in perpetuity and see how many of the staking rewards they've contributed to over time and see the impact over time, which is really exciting. And currently, the staking rewards are split into two expenditure areas by the UNHCR. 20% of staking rewards will go to UNHCR's innovation program, and 80% will fund on-the-ground missions in traditionally chronically underfunded refugee crises.
It's very interesting use cases and how blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies are solving those interesting. And then there's, you know, I've been involved in the Beirut bombing that happened in 2020. And it was a disaster managing the case there. And I don't know, you know, we would have loved some use cases of blockchain being deployed, because we received huge amounts of money, but then later on when it came, where did the money go? Or where did that? So that's how, why I'm asking now is, how does this blockchain really enhances this transparency, accountability, efficiency of, especially in such scenarios where you're dealing with, and then knowing how it is really, you're able to target, you're able to define transparently and everything related to that.
Yeah, so currently the transparency aspect is really related to the resource mobilization, where people can actually see how much has been raised, what and by whom, who's been giving, and who's and how people have been receiving this, at least from the UNHCR receiving the rewards. And of course, we're looking into ways where the disbursement of these funds can also be made transparently. And this is a use case that many within our ecosystem are interested in exploring in the most, let's say, permissionless manner. And what I mean by that is typically what we'll see when we speak to a number of different humanitarian organizations, NGOs, etc., they ask us the same types of questions. And what we've noticed is often these types of solutions or challenges are similar. So one way that we view things at the foundation is, if people have similar technical challenges, perhaps some of these can be solved through open source tooling that actually enables a broader group to participate and to reduce their development costs for certain solutions, so that when, you know, they have a very specific use case that is part of a broader challenge, a broader challenge setting, they can kind of reuse that code, maintain it, but also tailor it to their very specific needs. So we're exploring these types of things with the community, with other organizations involved in the space. And what we'd like to do is, you know, create tools that are replicable and reusable by others. So what we're hoping, at least from this pilot, is also to document it really well, and to share a playbook of sorts with the broader NGO community to kind of understand how we did it, why we did it, what were the challenges, what were the successful opportunities, and where can this type of, resource mobilization model be useful for their organization. So we're really about shared learning and open sourcing knowledge as much as possible.
Yeah, it's a very important open sourcing. And that's why with what you're talking about, you said pilot, but do you have any successful, notable successful stories so far with the UNHCR, or still we're in piloting phase?
So currently it's very much a pilot. We've had successes within the pilot where the stake pool itself is somewhat of a hub. And we have, you know, little smaller pilots that are kind of hubs that or spokes that fit into this hub. These include NFT projects of different kinds that UNHCR has participated with some of our community projects. They include a charity fundraise NFT that was somewhat done as a proof of attendance type of use case at Paris Blockchain Week and Consensus in Austin, Texas. We also have a version of an auction for a particular NFT. And so essentially what's happening here is the success of the project as a whole will be measured at the end. But what we see here in terms of success is not only the community's engagement, but the ability that our partners at Switzerland for UNHCR have had to really grow their understanding of how to interact with the Web3 ecosystem and community. The jump to set up a stake pool is a massive undertaking and required a lot of education. The same thing goes with setting up different NFT collections, where typically most organizations would outsource this to a third party for them to do that. Whereas what we love about UNHCR is that they've actually picked that up themselves and they're doing the learning so that in future, we hope that they can interact with our community and other Web3 communities in a very simple manner, in a way that they understand the technology. And we're really happy to kind of walk side by side with them on these types of
things. It's a learning experience, I think, for all of us. And that's why I want to ask you two different questions, but they are the same. One on the education side, where's the role of education and awareness in driving adoption so that we can have more? But what are the challenges of deploying such technologies? I'm sure, you know, you had to educate and the UNHCR itself somewhere. You had to find use cases, the other communities, how they can join. So there's a lot of, I think, challenges. Governments, you know, when you say, usually when you say blockchain directly, I don't know why, it's cryptocurrencies. Yes, it is cryptocurrencies, but it's not also cryptocurrencies. You know, that even though it's a good thing, but they take it in a bad impact. So this is where, you know, challenges, education and things. Tell me about some use cases that, or some experience, I would say.
For sure. So that's a really good question. And education is a core part of what we do at the foundation. And sometimes we see it applied, like in the project with the UN Refugee Agency. When it comes to education, you could look at it in two ways. One, you could look at it from the point of view of educating the adopter of the technology or the potential adopter. Enterprises, et cetera, and then you could look at it in terms of educating those that are responsible for the enabling environment in which this technology can be adopted. These are governments, these are regulatory bodies, et cetera. And when it comes to education from an adoption point of view, we've launched an alpha program, an education program that's available online, and we hope that it will be released post-alpha reasonably soon, where essentially we discuss, you know, a wide range of topics from, you know, very blockchain fundamentals and generations to cryptography, structure, components, consensus algorithms, all the type of stuff that you need to have to just have a basic understanding of what this technology is so that you can get your creative juices flowing and think, how does this solve some of the challenges that I'm facing as a professional and that my organization is facing? Another part of this is obviously education through an applied lens. And so this is when we're testing out, you know, proof of concepts or pilot partnerships in fields like philanthropy with Switzerland for UNHCR, supply chain with the Georgian National Wine Agency, and then identity when it comes to, you know, identity of people and products in the sense of a recent proof of concept we did with Epoch Sports and Merchandise linking you know, digital items. So linking essentially an NFC chip to an actual on-chain NFT and then turning a piece of fan memorabilia into something that can also be tracked on-chain and create a better experience for the users. And then when we move to, you know, educating those that are responsible for the enabling environments, you know, we really believe that governments and regulatory stakeholders need to really collaborate with industry players for, you know, informed decision making that's beneficial to all stakeholders involved in blockchain. And of course, you know, there's a need to develop standards for both blockchain technology and digital assets. And this is something that we're really proactively involved in at the foundation. And of course, you know, education similar to what we do with adopters is something that's also important for these policymakers, that they understand the technology and can ask critical questions and receive, you know, the right answers when they're assessing different forms of blockchain technologies, their own sustainability, and really have this evidence-based policy discussion at an international level, because that is the nature of this technology. Like the internet, blockchain technology, you know, traverses borders, peoples and cultures. So it's really important that, you know, regulatory understanding is has kind of an evidence base across the globe. Yeah.
Well, it is the Internet 3.0, no?
So that's right. Yeah.
It really advances. And then when you mention governments, and you know, you mentioned a lot of things that the governments need, and then one of the most important, I say, foster the innovation part. I don't know if you can shed more light on this. And then, and there any specific partnerships or collaboration on the horizon also for Cardano blockchain that you can share? I know sometimes you cannot disclose.
So I think with governments, especially, it's a different nature of engagement than when you deal with the private sector of different forms and sizes. One I can speak to is the project that we have running in Georgia, where initially what was started as a proof of concept to showcase the traceability of wines.
Not just any wine, maybe the oldest wine available.
That is true. Yes, a lot of people don't know this, but Georgia is actually the home of wine over 8,000 years ago and very peculiarly made in clay vats. And essentially, yes, within Georgia, we started working on a proof of concept for the traceability and provenance of organic wine. This was in 2021, using metadata on Cardano. And this is a very clear use case of why Cardano for supply chain, where the flexibility of the metadata and the amount of detail that could be inputted in the metadata linked to a particular bottle is comparatively high relative to other blockchain solutions, at least in the public space, public blockchain space. And from there, we had a successful POC, and we're currently scaling that to a regional level pilot in the Bolnisi region. You can read more about this in the Cardano Foundation's annual report. And we're hoping that once we get past this regional deployment, that we can look into questions around national provenance and appellations and all the interesting things that make a cultural value add agricultural good even more valuable as it's being exported to new markets. So that's one of the ways that we work with governments. And of course, we have these kind of policy and regulatory discussions on an ongoing basis outside of projects.
Very interesting. So as individuals such as myself, other people that are watching, what would you give as an advice, and even to organizations maybe looking to explore and leverage the blockchain technology for their own initiatives? I know many organizations which I consult, the first thing we say, please let us understand how can blockchain solve our problems, because blockchain doesn't solve all of the problems, and it's not just a trend, but you have to really have a use case for it so that you solve a problem.
So this is a really good question. And of course, I think maybe the question you might follow with when you consult, and which we do as well when we're approached by third parties, is, well, tell us, what are your problems? And then we need to figure out, okay, where does blockchain fit within a specific problem space in a certain value chain? I think this is why education is so important, is it would allow a broader span of people to then analyze their, let's say, business problems and understand this is maybe where blockchain has a potential to solve this issue. And then let me reach out to Rudy, Alex, and whoever else in the blockchain space and ask them, am I right? Is this what I can actually use this for? So for some more kind of targeted conversations, right? So that's why education is so important. So how would these organizations approach this? I would encourage them to reach out to the Cardano Foundation if they want to understand more about the Cardano blockchain. I'd encourage them to sign up to our Alpha program. But more importantly, I'd encourage them to join us at the Cardano Summit. Why? It's not only because the Cardano Foundation is going to be there, it's because our entire community of builders, of thinkers, of innovators are going to be there to share some of their experiences. And, at the foundation, we're generalists. We have certain themes of a specialization, but in terms of specific use cases, that's the community that decides, that's the market that decides whether they're looking into music or RealFi or lending protocols or whatever it might be. These are the experts, and they're coming to Dubai as well as 20 other satellite events all over the world. But the most important...
That's what I want you to tell me. Dive directly into the Cardano Foundation event and then so that they know exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and most importantly, the Cardano Summit in Dubai is not just about Cardano. It's about blockchain. We're not going to succeed in an island. The world is full of multiple protocols. And so, you know, we're really inviting the broader blockchain ecosystem globally and within Dubai, from other L1s, from other stakeholders that may not even be fully into the Web3 space, but are starting to dip their toes. And really what we want to foster are quality conversations with quality actors about how this technology can shape the future of Dubai, its region, but also, you know, how this can do, this can have an impact on a global level in the years to come. So come to Dubai, come to one of the 20 satellite events that's happening globally. And if you can't travel, just join us online and feel free to connect with the Cardano Foundation.
Interesting. I'll be there. I hope you will be there so that we can.
I'm definitely going to be there. See you there, Rudy.
That's definitely, you know, I'm looking more forward now to add on this. So I'd like to thank you, Alex, for this and being our guest today and really sharing your insights. I don't know if you have last words before I conclude this episode.
I would say sign up to the summit. Keep a lookout for some announcements coming up real soon when it comes to that. If you want to get involved as an individual or an organization that wants to do good and support displaced people through the Stakepool project, reach out to us. And if you want to understand about, you know, Cardano and blockchain more generally, again, reach out to us. This is our job. We're here to help.
Thank you again. And big thanks to our viewers for tuning in. You can watch the recording and this episode on YouTube and other channels that we have, and also on Reels. See you next time. Stay tuned. Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. So we're glad to have another episode of DX Talks, and this time with Cardano Foundation, our dear friends. A lot of exciting, I would say, news that are coming as we speak. So November is a very busy month. An event will be hosted in Dubai. We were going to be finding out more of this, and our discussion of today is about the partnerships and what's happening in the world of humanitarian assistance, and how can blockchain really solve those issues and try to really change things. So join us for this exclusive interview with Alexander, or Alex Maza, the Outreach Development Officer at Cardano Foundation. Alex has played a crucial role in establishing significant partnerships, including groundbreaking collaboration between Cardano Foundation and the UNHCR, High Commission for Refugees. And then we know what's the situation of the refugees in the globe and what's happening. In this interview, we will delve into the partnerships between Cardano and UNHCR, as well explore how blockchain technologies is being leveraged to provide assistance to forcibly displaced individuals. Additionally, we get an exclusive sneak peek into much anticipated Cardano Foundation event that is scheduled in November 2023 in Dubai this time. Last year, we hosted, I was one of the organizers of the community event in Dubai, and it was super success. So we're looking forward for the 2023 edition. So join us and join our expert to share their insights on the event theme, discover how this event aims to empower the global blockchain community and foster, most importantly, meaningful collaboration for decentralized and sustainable future. So let me welcome again my host, my guest, Alex. Alex, welcome to DX Talks.
Hi, Rudy. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to be here.
Do you mind introducing yourself to our audience? What do you do and what is your specialization?
Of course. I'm just to introduce the Cardano Foundation as a Swiss-based nonprofit that's responsible for advancing Cardano as a public digital infrastructure and to really anchor it in the financial and social systems of the world. And our focus at the foundation is threefold. It's about adoption, it's about education, and it's about operational resilience. My role at the foundation is primarily on the partnership side of things, and I look at sustainability-related topics. So the use of blockchain for sustainability, which we'll be speaking about today, around the use case that we have with the UN Refugee Agency, and the sustainability of the blockchain. So the ability for this amazing technology to continue delivering value in a decentralized, distributed way long into the future, hopefully long after you and I are both gone from this planet, but it still ends up being a good place to live.
I love what you said, long after we're still available, because this is the aim of this technology. And that's why, can you provide us an overview of the current state of blockchain technology and how it's going to impact various industries?
Yeah, so I think blockchain has is still a really, you know, innovative new technology compared to many of the other forms of digital technology, like we know of the internet, the World Wide Web. Now there's a lot of talk around AI and ML that really kind of comes forward. When you speak about blockchain, it's really a foundational technology that looks at a number of different sectors in which it could have an impact, really focusing on key issues like security, trust, and efficiency, and really trying to bring gains and reduce costs in these types of thematic areas. I think really the applications are broad. Essentially, it's a communication technology that could be applied transversally. And a key part around blockchain technology is obviously, as demand increases, scalability and transaction throughput becomes really crucial to meet that kind of demand. And, you know, maintaining security and decentralization is really important. And one of the ways that these types of needs can be met is, you know, education. This is part of what we're doing, you know, on this stream. And another bit that we're doing with education is comes to the Alpha program that the foundation is currently doing, where we believe that free quality education about blockchain and very accessible education about blockchain technology could provide the architects of the future with the means to actually use this technology and tailor it to solve some of the problems that they're the experts in. I think a key part of Web3, of course, is the ability to have community come into the ownership and the management of a technology platform like blockchain, Cardano in the case of what I work on. But really, again, you know, it's all about scaling to meet the needs of current and future demands and really kind of finding that in decentralization and security above all.
Thank you. I think it's interesting points that you have discussed. And I want to focus now more on how Cardano is really unique among other blockchains and trying to solve maybe those problems.
Yeah, of course. So there's this famed scalability trilemma that is often shared around the different trade-offs that blockchain projects or layer ones will need to take in order to try to achieve decentralization, security, and scalability all at once. We think that Cardano is rather unique in the sense that it has an incredibly vibrant community that both contributes to the adoption of the protocol and the development of use cases, but also the development of the technology, the foundational technology that can be reused for a number of different use cases. And that kind of speaks to the sustainability of the protocol, a powerful community that maintains the code base, that sets directions, and that allows us to thrive as an ecosystem. I think a second few bits and pieces is really around the tech stack and the technological specificities of Cardano. We're a proof-of-stake protocol that is provably secure. We're one of the few programmable layer ones that actually uses extended unspent transaction output. And that's essentially using the accounting model that is used by the Bitcoin blockchain and extending that to give it programmability, you know, use of smart contracts, NFTs, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the last bit is really when it comes to Cardano's metadata capability, where the metadata can actually be flexible and fit the customizable needs for different types of industrial applications and very specific applications that we see coming up in current times and also in future. And really, again, you know, to emphasize the community aspect, Cardano is people over code. And this code really serves the people. And this is how we see this kind of going forward, is really to make sure that this community of developers, of adopters, of token holders all participate on equal footing in the direction of the Cardano ecosystem and the Cardano blockchain as a whole.
Yes, it's very interesting. Thanks again for this. You know, community is a must. Community is first sometimes, because everything will be driven and is driven by the community itself. And this is where we start rolling into what Cardano is working with the United Nations to bring solutions in helping dispersed and displaced people at the end of the day. Can you elaborate more on your involvement with the UNHCR using the blockchain technology and how it's helping and address those humanitarian challenges?
Of course. So when it comes to displaced people, there are over 108 million of these, according to some reports at the end of 2022. And this is likely to be a growing trend, given, you know, conflicts, climate change, and other types of disruptions to people's lives. And when it came to the work that we're currently doing with Switzerland for UNHCR, so the UN Refugees Agency's national partner in Switzerland, we were looking at solving a very clear problem that's actually present, or at least piloting the solution for a problem that's present in many humanitarian organizations, where when it comes to resource mobilization, and this is, you know, fundraising, so financially, but also in-kind types of resources that get mobilized to support beneficiaries like refugees. Typically, these are linked to moments of crisis where people and organizations are more willing to give. whether these are conflicts such as the one in Ukraine or natural disasters such as the earthquake in Syria and Turkey, people will typically give to these. And at the same time, when people give to these types of crises, typically these are things that are called earmarked funding, which means that the money and the resources that are that are mobilized for these in these moments are usually only allowed to be deployed in these areas for that specific use case. And the reality is, of course, humanitarianism is something that happens also in between crises, where people still have to deliver resources to some of the most vulnerable. And this kind of challenge has resulted in numerous underfunded refugee crises being chronically underfunded over a number of years. And so what we were exploring, with this stake pool is a method, at least currently at a small scale, to generate funding and mobilize resources that can happen on a continuous basis and not be marked by crisis events, but also not be earmarked to a specific location or crisis, but rather generate resources that can be used at the UN Refugee Agency's discretion and expertise, rather than being dictated by donors. And so the way that we looked at doing that is by using Cardano's proof of stake protocol, which is quite unique and industry leading in the sense that it is liquid staking at the protocol level and not at a derivative level. What that means is ADA, Cardano's cryptocurrency, can be delegated as stake to secure the network. This ADA, when delegated, is not locked. It is non-custodial, and there is no slashing penalty attached to people delegating that specific ADA, which really mitigates any forms of risks related to bad validator behavior. And so it also makes it incredibly predictable what the staking reward may be and, you know, what the risks involved are. And so what we're doing with the stake pool is trying to create a new way of, mobilizing financial resources through staking rewards that are distributed completely by the Cardano protocol and are the result of people delegating their stake. And the really interesting bit about this is when people delegate their stake, they do not give away their principal. They maintain their principal, and what they give is the staking rewards that they would have earned on top of that. And where we've looked at this from a B2C perspective, where we engaged the Cardano community, who's had a fantastic response and delegated close to 1.5 million ADA in stake over the past few months, both through stake delegation as well as the purchasing of charity-oriented NFTs. And what we'll be doing pretty soon is going towards piloting the B2B approach, which can be really interesting for the corporate social responsibility departments of Web3 and non-Web3 organizations that might want to still maintain some of their principal in cryptocurrency and still support a good cause. And on top of that, another aspect of this which is interesting is, should they themselves choose to make a donation to the stake pool in perpetuity, they can support a cause in perpetuity and see how many of the staking rewards they've contributed to over time and see the impact over time, which is really exciting. And currently, the staking rewards are split into two expenditure areas by the UNHCR. 20% of staking rewards will go to UNHCR's innovation program, and 80% will fund on-the-ground missions in traditionally chronically underfunded refugee crises.
It's very interesting use cases and how blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies are solving those interesting. And then there's, you know, I've been involved in the Beirut bombing that happened in 2020. And it was a disaster managing the case there. And I don't know, you know, we would have loved some use cases of blockchain being deployed, because we received huge amounts of money, but then later on when it came, where did the money go? or where did that? So that's how, why I'm asking now is, how does this blockchain really enhances this transparency, accountability, efficiency of, especially in such scenarios where you're dealing with, and then knowing how it is really, you're able to target, you're able to define transparently and everything related to that.
Yeah, so currently the transparency aspect is really related to the resource mobilization, where people can actually see how much has been raised, what and by whom, who's been giving, and who's and how people have been receiving this, at least from the UNHCR receiving the rewards. And of course, we're looking into ways where the disbursement of these funds can also be made transparently. And this is a use case that many within our ecosystem are interested in exploring in the most, let's say, permissionless manner. And what I mean by that is typically what we'll see when we speak to a number of different humanitarian organizations, NGOs, etc., they ask us the same types of questions. And what we've noticed is often these types of solutions or challenges are similar. So one way that we view things at the foundation is if people have similar technical challenges, perhaps some of these can be solved through open source tooling that actually enables a broader group to participate and to reduce their development costs for certain solutions, so that when you know they have a very specific use case that is part of a broader challenge, a broader challenge setting, they can kind of reuse that code, maintain it, but also tailor it to their very specific needs. So we're exploring these types of things with the community, with other organizations involved in the space. And what we'd like to do is, you know, create tools that are replicable and reusable by others. So what we're hoping, at least from this pilot, is also to document it really well and to share a playbook of sorts with the broader NGO community to kind of understand how we did it, why we did it, what were the challenges, what were the successful opportunities, and where can this type of, what do you call it, resource mobilization model be useful for the organization. So we're really about shared learning and open sourcing knowledge as much as possible.
Yeah, it's a very important open sourcing. And that's why with what you're talking about, you said pilot, but do you have any successful, notable successful stories so far with the UNHCR, or still we're in piloting phase?
So currently it's very much a pilot. We've had successes within the pilot where the stake pool itself is somewhat of a hub. And we have, you know, little smaller pilots that are kind of hubs that or spokes that fit into this hub. These include NFT projects of different kinds that UNHCR has participated with some of our community projects. They include a charity fundraise NFT that was somewhat done as a proof of attendance type of use case at Paris Blockchain Week and Consensus in Austin, Texas. We also have a version of an auction for a particular NFT. And so essentially what's happening here is the success of the project as a whole will be measured at the end. But what we see here in terms of success is not only the community's engagement, but the ability that our partners at Switzerland for UNHCR have had to really grow their understanding of how to interact with the Web3 ecosystem and community. The jump to set up a stake pool is a massive undertaking and required a lot of education. The same thing goes with setting up different NFT collections, where typically most organizations would outsource this to a third party for them to do that. Whereas what we love about UNHCR is that they've actually picked that up themselves and they're doing the learning, so that in future, we hope that they can interact with our community and other Web3 communities in a very simple manner, in a way that they understand the technology. And we're really happy to kind of walk side by side with them on these types of
things. It's a learning experience, I think.
Exactly.
for all of us. And that's why I want to ask you two different questions, but they are the same. One on the education side, where's the role of education and awareness in driving adoption so that we can have more? And but what are the challenges of deploying such technologies? I'm sure, you know, you had to educate and the UNHCR itself somewhere. You had to find use cases, the other communities, how they can join. So there's a lot of, I think, challenges. Governments, you know, when you say, usually when you say blockchain directly, I don't know why, it's cryptocurrencies. Yes, it is cryptocurrencies, but it's not also cryptocurrencies. You know that even though it's a good thing, but they take it in a bad impact. So this is where, you know, challenges, education and things. Tell me about some use cases that, or some experience, I would say.
For sure. So that's a really good question. And education is a core part of what we do at the foundation. And sometimes we see it applied, like in the project with the UN Refugee Agency. When it comes to education, you could look at it in two ways. One, you could look at it from the point of view of educating the adopter of the technology or the potential adopter, enterprises, et cetera, and then you could look at it in terms of educating those that are responsible for the enabling environment in which this technology can be adopted. These are governments, these are regulatory bodies, et cetera. And when it comes to education from an adoption point of view, we've launched an alpha program, an education program that's available online, and we hope that it will be released post alpha reasonably soon, where essentially we discuss, you know, a wide range of topics from, you know, very blockchain fundamentals and generations to cryptography, structure, components, consensus algorithms, all the type of stuff that you need to have to just have a basic understanding of what this technology is so that you can get your creative juices flowing and think, how does this solve some of the challenges that I'm facing as a professional and that my organization is facing? Another part of this is obviously education through an applied lens. And so this is when we're testing out, you know, proof of concepts or pilot partnerships in fields like philanthropy with Switzerland for UNHCR, supply chain with the Georgian National Wine Agency, and then identity when it comes to, you know, identity of people and products, products in the sense of a recent proof of concept we did with Epoch Sports and Merchandise, linking you know, digital items. So linking essentially an NFC chip to an actual on-chain NFT and then turning a piece of fan memorabilia into something that can also be tracked on-chain and create a better experience for the users. And then when we move to, you know, educating those that are responsible for the enabling environments, you know, we really believe that governments and regulatory stakeholders need to really collaborate with industry players for, you know, informed decision making that's beneficial to all stakeholders involved in blockchain. And of course, you know, there's a need to develop standards for both blockchain technology and digital assets. And this is something that we're really proactively involved in at the foundation. And of course, you know, education, similar to what we do with adopters, is something that's also important for these policymakers, that they understand the technology and can ask critical questions and receive, you know, the right answers when they're assessing different forms of blockchain technologies, their own sustainability, and really have this evidence-based policy discussion at an international level, because that is the nature of this technology. Like the internet, blockchain technology, you know, traverses borders, peoples and cultures. So it's really important that, you know, regulatory understanding has kind of an evidence base across the globe. Yeah.
Well, it is the internet 3.0, no?
So that's right. Yeah.
It really advances. And then when you mention governments, and, you know, you mentioned a lot of things that the governments need, and then one of the most important, I say, foster the innovation part. I don't know if you can shed more light on this. And then, and there any specific partnerships or collaboration on the horizon also for Cardano blockchain that you can share? I know sometimes you cannot disclose.
So I think with governments, especially, it's a different nature of engagement than when you deal with the private sector of different forms and sizes. One I can speak to is the project that we have running in Georgia, where initially what was started as a proof of concept to showcase the traceability of wines.
Not just any wine, maybe the oldest wine available.
That is true. Yes, a lot of people don't know this, but Georgia is actually the home of wine over 8,000 years ago and very peculiarly made in clay vats. And essentially, yes, within Georgia, we started working on a proof of concept for the traceability and provenance of organic wine. This was in 2021, using metadata on Cardano. And this is a very clear use case of why Cardano for supply chain, where the flexibility of the metadata and the amount of detail that could be inputted in the metadata linked to a particular bottle is comparatively high relative to other blockchain solutions, at least in the public space, public blockchain space. And from there, we had a successful POC, and we're currently scaling that to a regional level pilot in the Bolnisi region. You can read more about this in the Cardano Foundation's annual report. And we're hoping that once we get past this regional deployment, that we can look into questions around national provenance and appellations and all the interesting things that make a cultural value add agricultural good even more valuable as it's being exported to new markets. So that's one of the ways that we work with governments. And of course, we have these kind of policy and regulatory discussions on an ongoing basis outside of projects.
Very interesting. So as individuals such as myself, other people that are watching, what would you give as an advice, and even to organizations maybe, looking to explore and leverage the blockchain technology for their own initiatives? I know many organizations which I consult, the first thing we say, please let us understand how can blockchain solve our problems. Because blockchain doesn't solve all of the problems, and it's not just a trend, but you have to really have a use case for it so that you solve a problem.
So this is a really good question. And of course, I think maybe the question you might follow with when you consult, and which we do as well when we're approached by third parties, is, well, tell us, what are your problems? And then we need to figure out, okay, where does blockchain fit within a specific problem space in a certain value chain? I think this is why education is so important, is it would allow a broader span of people to then analyze their, let's say, business problems and understand this is maybe where blockchain has a potential to solve this issue. And then let me reach out to Rudy, Alex, and whoever else in the blockchain space and ask them, am I right? Is this what I can actually use this for? So for some more kind of targeted conversations, right? So that's why education is so important. So how would these organizations approach this? I would encourage them to reach out to the Cardano Foundation if they want to understand more about the Cardano blockchain. I'd encourage them to sign up to our Alpha program. But more importantly, I'd encourage them to join us at the Cardano Summit. Why? It's not only because the Cardano Foundation is going to be there, it's because our entire community of builders, of thinkers, of innovators are going to be there to share some of their experiences. And, at the foundation, we're generalists. We have certain themes of a specialization, but in terms of specific use cases, that's the community that decides. That's the market that decides whether they're looking into music or RealFi or lending protocols or whatever it might be. These are the experts, and they're coming to Dubai, as well as 20 other satellite events all over the world. The most important.
That's what I want you to tell me. Dive directly into the Cardano Foundation event, and then so that That's they right, know yeah. exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and most importantly, the Cardano Summit in Dubai is not just about Cardano; it's about blockchain. We are not going to succeed in an island. The world is full of multiple protocols, and so we're really inviting the broader blockchain ecosystem globally and within Dubai, from other L1s, from other stakeholders that may not even be fully into the Web3 space, but are starting to dip their toes. And really what we want to foster are quality conversations with quality actors about how this technology can shape the future of Dubai, its region, but also, you know, how this can do, this can have an impact on a global level in the years to come. So come to Dubai, come to one of the 20 satellite events that's happening globally. And if you can't travel, just join us online and feel free to connect with the Cardano Foundation.
Interesting. I'll be there. I hope you will be there so that we can.
I'm definitely going to be there. See you there, Rudy.
That's definitely, you know, I'm looking more forward now to add on this. So I'd like to thank you, Alex, for this and being our guest today and really sharing your insights. I don't know if you have last words before I conclude this episode.
I would say sign up to the summit. Keep a lookout for some announcements coming up real soon when it comes to that. If you want to get involved as an individual or an organization that wants to do good and support displaced people through the Stakepool project, reach out to us. And if you want to understand about, you know, Cardano and blockchain more generally, again, reach out to us. This is our job. We're here to help.
Thank you again. And big thanks to our viewers for tuning in. You can watch the recording and this episode on YouTube and other channels that we have, and also on Reels. See you next time. Stay tuned. Thank you.